Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. You are listening to NPR News. I'm Ewan Kerr, sitting in for Kerry Miller. After the hours-long spectacle of former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen testifying to Congress, the world now tries to work out what it all meant in the short and the long term. Was it really a historic moment, a door opening to a possible presidential impeachment, or was it an embarrassing political circus destined to be quickly forgotten? We want to hear your thoughts, especially if Wednesday's hearing changed your mind on anything. You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. That's 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. You can also send me a tweet at Ewan Kerr. That's at EuanKerr. Again, at EuanKerr. Blame my parents. But first, let's turn to North Korea. The U.S.-North Korean summit is over without an agreement. President Trump says he and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made progress, but he didn't get the denuclearization he wanted.
We had a really, a very productive time. We thought, and I thought, and Secretary Pompeo felt that it wasn't a good thing to be signing anything. I'm going to let Mike speak about it. But we literally just left. We spent pretty much all day with Kim Jong-un, who is he's quite a guy and quite a character. And I think our relationship is very strong. But at this time, we had some options. And at this time, we decided not to do any of the options. And we'll see where that goes. But it was a very interesting 2 days. And I think actually it was a very productive 2 days. But sometimes you have to walk.
For his part, Kim did not get the lifting of economic sanctions that he wanted. He did get that second summit with the President of the United States in a year, although President Trump says it may be sometime before there is another one. Our guest today is Soo Kim, a former CIA North Korea analyst. She focused on the regime's leadership, nuclear proliferation, and propaganda analysis. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. You know, it's usual when two leaders on this level meet, they produce some sort of agreement at the end. But not only did this summit produce no agreement, it actually ended 2 hours early. What do you understand happened?
Well, you know, people have been saying that a no deal is probably better than a bad deal. So in effect, this no deal could have saved the United States from walking into a deal that would give Pyongyang even more leverage. If I may walk back and try to explain what happened, there were a few factors that people could point to say this is why the talks failed. First off, President Trump, when he came out to do the press conference, he said that Kim Jong-un was, quote, unprepared to do more. And that, as he explained, was it had to do with timing, it had to do with the sequencing. When it came down to it, Kim Jong-un wanted sanctions in full lifted in exchange for the dismantling of the Yongbyon reactor facility. And as we know, getting rid of Yongbyon is one thing, but there's complicating factors that have to do with verification, allowing inspectors on site to do such. And Kim was not willing to take that next, I don't even want to call it a step, but you know, taking that next half step to show the United States that it is going to move forward on its end of the deal to denuclearize. So they were deadlocked at that moment. The United States pretty much said that we are not going to sign a deal wherein we're not actually getting anything in return. North Korea was not offering the United States anything that was new, that was promising. So they walked away. The second factor is, you know, there was just lack of preparation on Washington's part. Negotiations with North Korea, they're very, very tough. There's this lack of understanding and perception gap between the two countries. also just ironing out a deal that involves denuclearization, you have to think about the technical aspects, you have to think about protocol and the policymaking process, and you need technical advisors, you need experts to be able to walk and hammer out each and every step and minor step of the process. My understanding is that that didn't happen in the lead up to the talks. We had working level talks between Washington and Pyongyang, but they did not seem to be quite as fruitful as they should have been in the lead up to yesterday's talks. So that probably had a factor in bringing us to where we were yesterday.
Although it has to be said that there was also probably more preparation for this summit than there was for the last summit.
Well, that is kind of hard to say, because I think in the weeks, probably a month leading up to Vietnam, we did see a lot of shuffling among Washington, Pyongyang, and even Seoul. So there was this perception that there was a lot of movement, that people were shuffling and scrambling to get things in order. But the fact of the matter is that the divide between U.S. and North Korea over the key points of the negotiations, that's, you know, terms of denuclearization, timing, concessions, were not, that bridge was never, it was never mended. So walking into talks without preparation, without having a full understanding of what North Korea means when it talks about denuclearization, what, you know, an end of war declaration, what peace actually means for North Korea, that was probably a big trap for the United States. Now, the third factor that was introduced into the Vietnam summit was, I would say, the Bolton factor. National Security Advisor John Bolton took part in the trip. He had been laying low for quite a while, but his presence during the talks could have shifted U.S. position on North Korea, where we had been so ready to sign away the end of hostilities between Washington and North Korea. Up to the summit, Bolton shows up. He is known to be hardline. He is known
very
to,
hardline,
on
yeah.
the other hand, yes. But he also is an expert when it comes to proliferation, when it comes to dealing with a tough negotiating partner like North Korea. So having his presence might have actually deadlocked progress in North Korea. So I can't imagine what would have happened if he had not been there. Maybe we would have walked into a deal, but that could be a factor. And then lastly, this is, you know, what's going on domestically for President Trump was probably a distraction for him. So,
well, I was really wondering about that, because clearly we got the Cohen hearings going on, and then there's just the general the hurly burly that's going on in Washington at the moment. I mean, how much was that a distraction?
Well, I mean, I'm not in President Trump's head, obviously, but I would think that, you know, if he's squeezed on so many fronts, you know, with being criticized for some of his policies, now having Cohen coming out and betraying him, calling him a con man and a racist, telling the people that, you know, Trump had advanced knowledge of the WikiLeaks plans, that on top of what's going on with North Korea, what's going on between India and Pakistan, Venezuela, he alluded to these things at the very beginning of his press conference, which to me was sending a signal that North Korea, although it is a pressing national security matter, is not going to, at least perception-wise, not going to take precedence over other things that the U.S. has on its plate. So he was probably setting the atmosphere up so that we weren't going to expect anything, although we knew that we were not going to get a deal pretty much, you know, once we've heard that the talks were ending 20, 30 minutes earlier than planned. So there was a lot on Trump's mind to come back to the United States with a deal that's we can't even call it a deal. He might have faced even more criticism from the media.
Interesting. So let's look at this from the point of view of Kim Jong-un, though. He now apparently is riding the train back to North Korea. It's a trip that may take a couple of days.
Yes.
What will his message be to North Koreans once he gets back? I mean, is this, will he say he held the line, or how will he spin this?
Well, one thing we have to keep in mind about North Korea and its media is that it's controlled. It is a one-person authoritarian system, So although Kim is going to be disappointed with the outcome, he can always just not report to his people. The other option is to always just shift the blame toward the United States to the U.S. imperialists, portraying it as such that North Korea has already made the effort to make peace with Washington, and it was Washington's part to keep up its end of the deal. That has not happened, so Kim Jong-un decided that it would not be in the interest of him and his country to pursue negotiations, things of that nature.
Our guest today is Soo Kim, a former CIA North Korea analyst focusing on North Korea's regime's leadership, nuclear proliferation, and propaganda analysis. The we've been talking a little about the nuclear facility here, but I think that there's perhaps maybe even a basic difference of understanding about what denuclearization means between the two sides, and that there's actually North Korea is hoping that there will be the removal of weapons on the U.S. side as well as the North Korean side. I mean, is it that basic that they just really are talking completely past each other?
Well, they are indeed talking past each other. North Korea, from the get-go, never had the intention of giving up its nuclear weapons arsenal. Holding on to nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles, is a way for the Kim regime, the Kim dynasty, to survive against the so-called threats from the United States. It's also an effective bargaining chip in negotiations. Vis-a-vis South Korea, its southern neighbor, it's also an effective intimidation tool. It's a good way to shake South Korea's nerves, gain some extractions, and repeat that cycle. So, never had the intention of denuclearizing. The misstep also was when the Singapore summit, the declaration was signed, and it was a vague four-point agreement where they mentioned the denuclearization of not North Korea but the Korean Peninsula. So, North Korea from the get-go was pretty consistent in what it wanted. It was how it was perceived, how it was understood by Washington. And to a certain extent, South Korea also had a part in conveying this message to Washington when National Security Advisor Chung Myung visited Washington in the White House. He said that the North Koreans wanted to denuclearize. He didn't make it explicit that it was the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Had that critical factor been taken into consideration, and had we actually responded and deliberated this a little bit more, we might not have gotten to a point where we would, you know, enter into negotiations not once but twice now, as of yesterday. So misperception, history of North Korea, and the goal of having nuclear weapons for North Korea is to exactly, if we had signed an end of war declaration or something as, you know, just symbolic or seemingly benign as, you know, removing U.S. strategic assets from the Korean Peninsula, that would give North Korea the justification to call into question the presence of U.S. troops. So they would say, there's no war going on between the United States and North Korea. The Korean War has ended. So why do we need U.S. the presence of U.S. troops in South Korea? So that would mean U.S. troops would be withdrawing, automatically setting us down into the path of peace. But this peace is not, you know, something that what the rest of the world, what the United States has envisioned, where North Korea gives up all of its nuclear weapons and embraces democracy and opens up its country. It's in fact putting Kim Jong-un closer to achieving his country's long-term goal of reunifying the Korean Peninsula under North Korean terms. And that has very, very far-reaching implications, not just between North and South Korea, but U.S. strategic interests, and also the regional power balance as well.
Does it concern you that President Trump may return to Washington, D.C., and decide just to set the whole Korean situation aside? He didn't get a win here, or at least not one that he's probably able to campaign much upon, and that it is so complicated that it might be easier just to set it aside?
Sure. Well, that certainly is a concern that some Korea watchers have, myself included. But I would think that because there are still some loose threads that we have to unravel, I would imagine that South Korea was not privy to Trump's decision. They did not tell South Korea in advance that this was going to happen. They just decided once they entered into talks with North Korea that they were just not going to sign a deal. So Seoul, the South Korean government, they were sort of up in arms about this. They were trying to figure out what was going on. I would imagine that in the coming weeks and months that President Moon would want to come visit Washington to talk to President Trump to see what's going on, to see if there's anything that they could do to salvage. Japan, likewise, might want to get involved. So as much as President Trump wants to just sort of bury this under the rug, doing so, it's not just contingent upon him and his decision, but we have to wait and see how North Korea responds, too. For Kim Jong-un, he probably did not expect this outcome either. He probably came in with, I don't want to say full confidence, but, you know, a little bit of comfort enough to know that at the very least, as the press has been speculating, they were going to get some small concession that would give North Korea some breathing space, and that didn't happen at all. But North Korea has remained silent in terms of reading out from the summit. He's going to remain in Vietnam still, I believe, until March 2nd. So there's a little bit of time. And for Kim Jong-un, he also needs to think about what's at stake for him as well. I mean, is he going to return to provocations? Is he going to, as President Trump said during the press conference, refrain from testing nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles? So there is the concern that the North Korea issue could be kind of muffled during the rest of the Trump administration. But as much as he wants to muffle it, it's just going to build up. And whether it's his administration or the subsequent one, somebody's going to have to deal with this. So it's not going to go away anytime soon.
We've just got a couple of minutes left here. But I'm curious, you know, there was a certain amount of momentum going into this summit, a certain amount of hope that there might be some progress. But has that momentum been lost? And then what will it take to kind of maintain the momentum? Does there need to be some action quickly now, or can things be left just to lie for a while before they get back to actually negotiating?
Well, I think momentum at this moment it's not completely dead. There's still a lot of reaction and a lot of, I guess, digestion that needs to be done on Washington's part, on Pyongyang's part, and to an extent, South Korea as well. So an understanding that the gravity of the North Korean nuclear issue has been something that's been going on for decades, it's bound to resurface. For Kim Jong-un, his opportunity was to secure an agreement to bind the United States into some sort of obligation while President Trump was in office and also while President Moon Jae-in was in office. There's not much time left if you want to think about it in this constricted time frame, but North Korea also operates in a very long-term view. So, yes, this is sort of a blow to Kim's ego, and it's not what he expected. It's not what he hoped for. At the same time, they can always reshift. They can always reposition themselves to think about how else to effectively start needling us, to start grating on our nerves. They also have the possibility and the option to continue to test, although that would have severe implications, I would say, in terms of if we were to go into another round of renegotiations, whether that's working level or even something higher, that's going to go in the record, I guess, in the books for North Korea. So Kim does have to be really careful, but he is also a very savvy negotiator, and the North Koreans know us so well, and they've studied us for many, many decades that they probably know us a lot better than we know ourselves. So, yes, this is, in the short-term view, it's a failed agreement by many, but I'm inclined to think that a no deal right now is probably a better alternative than to sign a deal where we don't really know what's going on. We don't know what the short, mid, and even long-term implications of a peace agreement or some sort of peace arrangement with North Korea was actually going to entail. So it's a good pause moment, and perhaps this is also going to give the three parties some time to reassess, to think about what's in their best interest. I'm not sure if we want to consider North Korea's best interest as much as there's the human rights concern, mm-hmm. things like that. But when it comes to dealing with Kim himself, I think it's not something that's going to take. It's not a problem that's going to take, you know, months or weeks to solve. This is a long term view. It's a long battle, and we have to keep that in mind.
Soo Kim is a former CIA North Korean analyst talking to us today about the news that the North Korean summit ended yesterday without an agreement. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.